In 1965, Charles Schulz's comic strip Peanuts, which had already been in newspapers for 15 years, appeared on National Network Television in the form of a Charlie Brown Christmas. A mere 25 minutes long, not counting commercials, the story starts with Charlie expressing his signature anxiety and depression around the coming Christmas season. He says he's not happy like he feels he's supposed to, or sees in his peers, and that despite getting gifts and material things and doing family Christmas rituals that he likes, he's still unhappy. As new main characters are introduced, they display some sort of grating affirmation of what Charlie Brown deplores as commercialism. The character Lucy suggests that Charlie Brown get involved to combat his alienation, specifically in directing a school Christmas play. When he shows up, no one seems to take him very seriously, and it's eventually decided the play needs a Christmas tree. Charlie goes out to buy one, but can only find a limp sapling of a tree. This leads to more ridicule. Charlie Brown tries to decorate the tree, but gives up and walks off. In the next and final scene, the whole cast appears and collectively transforms the tree, almost by magic, into a spectacle of its former self. Charlie Brown returns, elated, and they sing, and the movie ends. Well, I am joined today by a special guest to help review this classic American movie, A Charlie Brown Christmas. We have Dennis Gravey on, a member of the Industrial Workers of the World and the Maryland Buck Abolitionist Collective. Thanks for coming on to the Old Mole today, Dennis.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So, Dennis, you had emailed me about this because we know each other and said, hey, I really like this movie. It's an all-time American classic and has some interesting things going on in it that I think we could talk about on the Old Mole about American society and just kind of the ongoing struggle for liberation. So why did you want to talk about this?
Well, I always liked the movie. I grew up with it. I watched it as a kid, but I wasn't necessarily my nostalgia that I keep on watching it every year. I really just like the tone. I think it's a really aesthetically beautiful and almost poetic piece. But now watching it again with a political lens and trying to make a review of it, I think it opens up some really fascinating conversations.
Yeah, I mean, the film's explicit like message or kind of plot concern has to do with what in the movie is referred to as commercialism, which for different viewers has resonated as kind of a euphemism for capitalism. I do think that this is a bit different than consumerism, but maybe we can try to address that later. You think this film resonates with American culture in a way that allows us to talk about race. What does race have to do with this film?
Yeah, well, I don't think it directly talks about any of that, but given its own narrative and its own place in American history, like just situating it in time, I think it offers some really interesting opportunities to open those conversations. So my sense of the movie is that it's sort of this narrative of Charlie Brown trying to find authenticity. Right, he's recognizing a kind of alienation and a kind of inauthenticity in the everyday life within American capitalism. I think we have to be very clear that the commercialism that he's decrying is a product of commodified labor and a commodity society. So he goes through various stages of trying to get involved. He starts with this massive depression, which he continues the rest of the time, which is an indication of a kind of realism, right? He can't hold up this lie. And he's trying to find ways to get his grip on the world. The suggestion of Lucy to go get involved, quote-unquote, is a first brush to become a boss, right? That's his first attempt to find authenticity, is to find some command ownership over other people's work in the form of being a director. And that fails mostly because he doesn't have any legitimate authority. His workers don't respect him, and he doesn't have a way to actually bridge that gap within the situation. And so he leaves and he says, we're going to get a tree. And he goes and he sees, okay, so this is not what I wanted. I don't want these big aluminum trees. I want something authentic. And he does the next stage, which is embracing the marginal, right? He goes and finds the weak and the feeble and the meek, and he embraces and says, this is authenticity, right? It's something that is forgotten and lost and no one cares about. Brings his tree back. And then he gets decried, right? People don't care about this. And in some ways he sees this wasn't an answer, right? So what's the next stage? The next stage is when he says, doesn't anybody know what Christmas really means? And Linus gets in and says, I know what Christmas means, and recites the Bible, the true biblical definition of Christmas. And I think there's an important moment there. I always grew up loving that moment because of its stillness, and biblical language is actually very beautiful. But there's a way that it falls flat. And watching it, especially again as an adult, after Linus does his recitation, there's a quiet, and the only thing that Charlie Brown can do is walk away. Because it doesn't work. It's not enough. That it doesn't fix the tree. It doesn't fix how he feels. It's almost like a dictionary definition of what Christmas means. And he goes off, and he attempts one last time. His last stage is his own personal capacity. He says, I'm going to fix this tree. And he goes, and after his final betrayal of his faithful companion dog, but he takes the ornament off of Snoopy's house, puts it on the tree, and it's destroyed. And he has this one beautifully depressed, beautifully self-brutal line.
Everything I touch gets ruined.
And then he wanders away. And then there's a final moment of redemption that I think is, to some extent, can we understand as a moral of the story, or we could understand as a moral of the story, where his workers, right? In this context, they were his employees. They come to the tree and they have some sympathy for it. They find collectively some sympathy. And what do? They do this magic that you talked about. And the magic is their collective labor. They sort of mass into this spinning ball of hands, and they take all the decorations off the doghouse and wave themselves on the tree, and the tree becomes magically transformed into a beautiful icon of authenticity. And Charlie Brown comes back, and he is embraced by them in a joyous cry of Merry Christmas, and then they sing in a sort of beloved community sort of feeling. And I think that to me is maybe against the grain, but a hopeful narrative reading of the piece as it stands, founded in the idea of collective labor as a form of solidarity.
It's a film that casts all white characters. There isn't an African-American character in Charles Schulz comics until he creates Franklin in 1968, 3 years after Charlie Brown Christmas. And it's telling a story about capitalism and the way in which it impinges on Christmas, which I think is coded for American culture as like white culture. Obviously, African Americans and people of other races and ethnicities have taken on the Christian religion, but in America, it is tied, I think, most heavily to white identity. And so it is the natural go-to for the dominant society's idea of how capitalism is undermining its roots while not really allowing for any reflection on how its roots are part of its own malaise. And so that's why it focuses on Christianity, but it doesn't leave too many windows for seeing a broader kind of multicultural, multi-ethnic, full American society that is also grappling with quote-unquote commercialism, and how that doesn't just take away the good feeling of the season, but actually makes life objectively miserable.
And I think that we should stick for a second on whether this final moment of authenticity is actually viable, is actually legitimate, because I think reflecting on it, it doesn't really work. Right. I think not only because we have this implied blind spot of anyone else who doesn't look like the people on the screen, but we also have just the fact that there's been no transformation of everyday life. There's just been a collective embrace for a brief moment. And Charlie Brown's depression isn't over. The rest of Charlie Brown continues to happen. And he's a very depressed child for the rest of the Peanuts universe. And so there is a way in which that kind of solidarity that I think the movie does profess fails, and fails miserably in its job.
When they go searching for the tree in the end, they're going through the tree lot, which in the 1960s could very well be populated by aluminum trees in addition to just regular cut farm trees. And when they find the little underdog tree, which, you know, has a lot of appeal because of the underdog narrative in American culture and maybe across cultures, they take it back, and, you know, it's not physically able of supporting the traditional ornaments. I mean, all that Charlie Brown puts on it is a bulb, which doesn't weigh anything, and it still pulls it over. It emphasizes the, like, burden of what that spectacle is for this little, albeit authentic, tree. And when the cast of the play dress it up, they pull all of the inauthentic decorations off of Snoopy's house, which just won first prize for the decoration contest, and they use it as the material to transform the tree into something that just doesn't look like the tree that we saw, which only had like four or five branches. It's now this full conical shaped green, beautiful, covered with bulbs and ribbons, like I said, spectacle of its former self. And in a way, that's satisfying, and it's supposed to represent the satisfaction they're after. And yet, I think if we pay attention to where they just were, we realize that it takes its cues for that satisfaction from the very culture that is leaving it dissatisfied.
Yeah, and I think that part of why I brought up the aesthetic that I like about it, that aesthetic feels very authentic and feels very profound, but I agree that the kind of cosmology that it still operates with is a commodified cosmology. This movie was actually funded by Coca-Cola, right? And Coca-Cola is one of the originary American producers of Christmas as a commodity. So the exact thing that Charlie Brown is decrying is the thing that makes this whole movie possible. And adding on this level of authenticity to what is ultimately, objectively, an inauthentic life world.
So let's talk about race again.
Thinking about race offers a really important opportunity to problematize that moral that I mentioned that I brought out of this, and I think give some deep lessons for what a workers' revolution means and how it could be possible. So the end of this movie to me is not satisfying. Just let's be real. Charlie Brown is not going to stop being depressed after this movie. Charlie Brown's friends are not going to stop being really mean to him after this movie. And the commodified culture is not going to go away as a constitutive of the everyday life as part of this movie.
And the Charlie Brown franchise depends on that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the question then is, what is holding together that everyday life for those kids that this moment of solidarity, embrace of labor doesn't do, right? And to me, we can look at it by thinking about jazz. And thinking about cool, right? Because what allows the other kids to get through the day that Charlie Brown can't access? It's dancing to jazz, right? When they're doing the play and they start dancing, Lucy goes, "Isn't this great?" And Charlie Brown goes, "No, this is terrible. This is not Christmas." In the end, then, white society and white solidarity, even white the solidarity of white labor that I think this movie has a moral of, is founded on the domination of the black subject, is founded on white supremacy. And it's that foundation that holds it back from actually achieving any revolutionary transformation of society. We have a vision in this movie of a Norman Rockwell solidarity of labor that is also a solidarity with imperialism. So this is one thing, then, that it would take to have this labor solidarity mean actual transformation and abolition of commodity society. It would mean radically abolishing white supremacy and the liberation of the black subject.
Yeah, in a way, we're not saying that that's what should be in the film itself, per se, as far as its story, but because those are the conditions of the American society and culture that have produced this or helped to produce this comic, those conditions limit the possibility of its own vision achieving what it promises to, which is, you know, being happy with doing stuff together again.
Totally.
Well, that is all the time that we have for this review of A Charlie Brown Christmas. I would like to thank Dennis Gravy of the Industrial Workers of the World and the Marilyn Buck Abolitionist Collective for coming on.
Thanks so much. Yeah.
I'm Joe Clement.